Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything 2.0, because we just lost an hour of our show. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And here's what you missed. I watched Gross Point Garden Society. It's worth your time if you like Desperate Housewives and Grey's Anatomy, specifically the first seasons. Adam watched, binged the entire season of a new Netflix show.
Running Point.
Running Point. Kate, 2 points. Gross Point, yes. Running Point.
It's great. Go watch it. Logan hasn't watched it. He's going to see if he can get around to it.
We both watched Daredevil Born Again, the first two episodes. Adam had a pretty good time with it. We're both on the wait and see train. And I did not love it. But
didn't even like it.
I didn't think it was good.
You made some salient points about like the writing team behind it, and the look of it, like, you know, and like I countered a couple of things that I asked you about, which were kind of like, is it a soft reboot where the first episode is kind of to ingratiate us into the world?
Yeah.
But you made a very good point though, during our back and forth with it, which is that it's Born Again is like the storyline from Frank Miller, and we're kind of getting the Frank Miller of it all again.
Yeah, like dark, super dark. We'll see.
Yeah, where it goes. I made the point that, and I was going to actually ask you something else too, which is I made the point that the best part of the show was the action scene between the two cops, where Matt has had enough.
Yep.
And he keeps on saying, no, 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 don't do this. And he's not talking to the cops. He's talking to himself. And then he goes fucking hard on those cops, so much so that we don't know if they're alive, because what you were saying is like, you don't know they're alive because you see that moment where he takes the one cop that killed the one cop that's still alive, that was the corrupt cop, and he literally smashes his head against the freezer, and it literally looks like it goes snap, blood all over the place.
Yeah, it's definitely like we're gonna see the crumbling of Matt Murdock, and like how much he can like. Everything he thought he knew is kind of coming apart, you know, like Wilson Fisk as this like hero of New York. Like it's very hard for him to accept. And then, you know, I appreciate them taking on the like absolute dirty cop thing, but you also saw the Punisher tattoos that they have on them, which I'm assuming is how we get to the Punisher. Like he's going to, want to find Frank Castle and find out like what's going on. Either that or Castle is going to find out about what's going on and insert himself into the situation and, you know, be like, hey, yeah, no, y'all, you're not doing this, you know. You're not using me as a reason for you to be dirty cops.
Well, and that's okay. So, and that was the thing I was going to ask you is that wouldn't it be so fantastic if because Brenthal said that he came back because they had an intriguing storyline for him and for the Punisher because of the fact that he felt that he did what he could and that anything after this would be kind of. Like, even though he'd want to do it, it'd be, like, one-dimensional. Wouldn't it be kind of amazing if Brynthal's like castle is the inflection point for Matt. Like he comes back and he's the thing that gets Matt back on track. Because that's something that we've not seen in a Punisher story ever. Like Punisher is like chaotic neutral. No, he's chaos. Like he just cares about what the fuck he does, and that's it. At least the best of the Punisher like things, I always feel like he is a true anti-hero. He's somebody that you cannot trust other than to know that whatever he's trying to do is what he's trying to do. Like his goal is that and that alone. I don't know, like it'd be kind of intriguing, especially because it gives Brynthal more to play with other than like what he's already done. And I mean, like we talked about in the other thing, which is that I'm in the middle of rewatch. I'll just be really quick about this, but at the end of it, like I showed my wife the Punisher stuff and she was like, this is what I want. And I realized that the Punisher is more of my memories of the Netflix shows than the Daredevil stuff was. And it's so well made. And they've set and it very clearly came back to me, like all of the Punisher stuff. And then in those two seasons, they basically did everything you could possibly do with the Punisher in that era of Punisher, like who he is as a character.
Yeah.
You can't go anymore unless you try to do something different. Like you give him a Winter Soldier style story, right? That's at least my theory. If it is something, but to your point, this first series, I don't like, I'm fairly certain, like you're right. Like we're not going to get the playful Bendis, if you know what I mean. Like Bendis has always had a very like when he did stuff, like when he did the side things, like the side tangents with Matt Murdock and Daredevil, they were always very playful, swashbuckling samurai stories, right? They weren't heavy duty Frank Miller heads in the refrigerator. You probably like that reference. sort of storylines, right? And this is very much so the heads in the refrigerator stories.
Yeah. I do think, like, there's still a lot of, as much as I didn't like the first two episodes, really, there's some good stuff there. Vincent D'Onofrio is fantastic. Like, Wilson Fisk is, like, in a dude that's had a lot of masterful roles, like, this is, it's just his best, man. He's so good at doing this thing. I love the diner scene. They had leaked that early. They had dropped like that whole scene about a week ago, I think. And so I'd already seen it, but I do think it's really great. I like them kind of like sniping at each other more or less.
Mm-hmm.
He is going to be until I find something else, he's the reason I'm really, really, like, into the show. Killing Fog, I think, is an absolute huge mistake. And you brought up Michael Gandolfini in the part that we lost. I don't think he's good. I know he's supposed to be annoying. But,
yeah.
God, man, like, every jump, I was just like, ugh, I don't like this character, man.
But are you supposed to like him? Like, I feel like that's...
Probably not, but...
Yeah, he's literally an incel. Like, I mean, like, that's the way I took it, and I was like, oh, man, he's running with this shit. Because I don't think that the BV storyline is done with. I mean, especially because of how creepy and cringe he is with her. Like, oh man, like this is not gonna end well for her, like at least in my estimation. Like, I don't know, like it's very interesting. Like the worst thing that I could say, the worst critique I could say is that it really does feel like at its worst, it feels like Law and Order. And I don't like that.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean? Like,
Well, I brought this up. Unfortunately, it's lost. But the show creators, like, they created a show called Covert Affairs, which is a cookie cutter. I'm not saying it's bad. It's just not. It's not like Emmy winning. It's not The Sopranos. It's not.
No.
You know, it's just not that. It was.
It's like if like okay, so like. If Burn Notice was like B grade, it's lower than Burn Notice. Like at least Burn Notice is fun and well written. Covert Affairs is like cheap junky TV that like that wants to be Alias, but it deals more with the whole mishigosh of love affairs, and it's like and it doesn't even do that well. Like it's very kind of. It's very low end. It was a USA Network show that they tried to sell off of Burn Notice. So yeah, that's the kind of quality writers that they are. And it's not to say that you can't live up to like, you know, beyond that. I mean, like one of my favorite actors and screenwriters is Thomas Lennon. And that motherfucker wrote a book about how they, for shits and giggles, would sell things and do things because they knew that they were terrible, but they were getting paid. Like, you should read their section on Baywatch, and it is fucking wild that they got away with it. But that's also Thomas Lennon. Like, the man's, like a literal genius. Like, I mean, I feel like he makes cringe an artwork. Like a piece of art, like it's an art installation when you see him do his shit, but also like he's a very smart man. But again, I feel like I'm taking a little bit more of a, okay, let's see what happens. Let's see what happens because I'm really looking forward to Berenthal showing up as quickly as possible.
I mean, if you look at, maybe don't look at the IMDb page, but if you look at the IMDb page, he is in a lot of the proposed episodes.
Yes. Like he is. I already know.
Most of them. I feel like the only two episodes without the Punisher are the ones we just saw.
Exactly. So. You know, which, you know, let's be honest, like, I mean, that's kind of, I feel like that's where they came in and started to rewrite. Like, we have to be honest, like, I feel like it probably wasn't working because there was no pop. Like, it was all just basically the same Netflix bullshit, which is like, and I'm not trying to be down on it. It's just literally, I'm like, there's no, like, the worst thing that I could make about it is it's too dour, but that's what the original series was. Like, it was too navel gazing. And I'm like, okay, but there's these pops where I'm like, like I said, the action scene, and then like the promise of what Fisk and his wife, like the whole Sopranos-esque, like going to therapy thing. That really intrigues me because it kind of makes the connective tissue in a smart way where it's like Vanessa is still dealing with trust issues with like she gave it like the thing that makes that show isn't like Daredevil. It's Vanessa and Wilson's like love affair and how toxic it is and how toxic it gets through the entire run. Right. And it's interesting to me that they're, like, you know, their love affair ends because of a lot of bullshit, right? It doesn't end, but it does end. But then they're picking up the pieces in a really weird, real way of a married couple that's trying to figure out a way to trust each other. But the whole trust issue isn't just, like, for me, it's kind of interesting because it's not about whether or not you can trust them. It's like whether or not they're going to kill each other. Like, that's what the feeling and jive that I got is that you went away. I built this empire back as a woman.
Yep.
I don't fucking trust you. I don't trust you one bit.
Here's another thing that, like, that's very, very interesting to me. And it is not like, I guess we might get to examine it more in the therapy stuff if we do get that. But it's such a quick thing in the first two episodes where he just shows back up and it's just like, okay, yo, I'm back. You know, and she's like, well, I built all of this, like, with you gone. And, you know, now you want to be the mayor, and like, what does that mean for what I've done? It's very, I don't want to say glossed over, because I don't want to assume that we're not going to come back to it, but it did kind of feel glossed over. So,
and also the other thing is, like, it's something that, like, I kind of like, it's too bad we don't have, you know, computer ruins everything, 1.0, where I talked about, like, I feel like this is designed to be watched week to week now. And whereas the Daredevil before, we're so used to, like, ingesting it over a weekend.
Yeah.
That, like, even me, I had to stop myself and go, oh, fuck, it's designed to be weekly, because it has cliffhangers, like, weekly. And so it's not like the other one where, like, the weird part is that those shows, those Netflix shows, are really designed. There's no cliffhanger. It just literally ends, and the next chapter begins. Like, it's a very weird thing to, like, watch a show and then see its, like, you know, watch the predecessor and then watch the reboot and know that they're designed two different ways. And it very much shows, like, it very much leads in with the trying to hook you week to week, this version of Daredevil. And I feel like that's where my comments about, like, Law and Order come from, because it really does feel like a procedural, a weekly procedural that I'm just not used to, where it's like the benefits of the Daredevil, the compliment I can give to Daredevil 1.0 is that it feels like a novel. Like, it feels like a continuous novel. Like, it's a, like, 10-hour film experience. Now, do I like that? Is there problems I have with it now? Yes, I do. But it's not of the creation and the content. And I feel like this is going to take an adjustment for all of us, because it's wild to me that this feels like episodic, where the other one felt narrative. And that is a big complaint for me. Like, thinking about it now over the time frame, that's a big complaint. Is that it feels episodic. And I don't know if I can handle a Daredevil. Like, we just finished a Spider-Man series that was very episodic, right? But they were giving it to us in chunks. Like,
yeah, which is chunks. Bizarre. Like, yeah, that bizarre. that would have been so great week to week.
Yeah.
I mean, it was great anyway, but yeah, week to week it would have been freaking just phenomenal. I'm somewhat excited about seeing where this goes, but while it is a lot better than a lot of the Marvel television we've gotten, like, I don't know. I think the fact that it's not doing anything new is really what upsets me. But at the same time, I feel like that's why clearly people are loving it, because it's giving them what they already had enjoyed and now will have more of. And that's okay too. You know, I don't have to like everything.
And also we should note that so something big has to happen in the middle of the series, because episode 5 and 6 are dropping at the same time, which is interesting. So we'll see how that goes. But again, it's like ultimately I'm positive. I have a feeling that, like, it's going to get progressively better. I'm more of a wait and see, whereas, like, I feel like we're on the same coin of wait and see, but you're more, I don't think this is going to work. Whereas I'm like, it might work. Which is interesting. We will definitely check back in over the next couple of weeks as we get more episodes. I feel like we don't have to come back.
We could get to like episode 6, and I'm just like, gosh, this is great. So
yeah, I mean, you know, it's not like I don't have a only murderers last season hope, like what happened, like, oh, the season before that, where you were like, I don't know about this. And then it was like, oh my God, it's the greatest. I don't have any hopes like that, but I feel like Castle being in it will bump it for both of us. And it only gets me more excited for the television special that they're going to have for him, which I'm like, okay, like, you're going to give us 90, it's like 75 minute, like, unrestricted, like, Punisher. Okay.
Yeah.
I can we'll do that. See. Yeah. We will definitely.
So with that said, we both went to the theater this week and watched Bong Joon-ho's new movie, Mickey 17. And yes. Let's talk about that. Weird to say spoil, because I don't, like, if you saw the trailer for this movie, I feel like you saw all the things you could learn from the movie. Like, there's no spoiler. They just keep cloning him, and he keeps dying.
I'm going to say this. This movie is the case study for tone in trailer, because if you're not an open moviegoer, what you got from those trailers, it shows you the story, but the tone is so different from the movie that you got from the film that was filmed and ultimately made by Bong Joon-ho. I mean, you should know, it's a Bong Joon-ho film. If you've seen this guy's films, you should know that tonally,
so
he plays.
I want to ask you, like, where does your Bong Joon-ho, like, where do you begin with his work? Like, what was your introduction?
My introduction was Memories of Murder. So
I feel like that most, like, film, like, nerds. True film nerds, like, that's their, like, oh, this guy. The big one before that was Barking Dogs Never Bite, right?
It was, that was his debut film, was
Barking Dogs Never Bite. Memories of Murder was the one that, like, really kind of put him on the map, more or less. Yes.
And then I forgot about him for a long time until Host came out. So, like, it's a combination of both, like, Host and Memories of Murder. Memories of Murder was like the secret tape. You remember when we used to have secret tapes?
Yeah. Where
you got a dub of something that was like, you need to see this fucking movie.
Yeah. Host was the one that I didn't see the host, but that was the one I remember. Like, I remember that box. I remember it on the DVD shelves, and people being like, oh no, this is wild, you gotta watch it. And I never got around to watching it. And then when Mother came out 3 years later, it was playing at, like, for like a week at my local theater. And I was like, you know what? Like, Film Spotting is going to talk about this movie. Film Dispenser is going to, or Film Dispenser, but yeah, Film Dispenser.
Yeah.
But, Slash Film's going to talk about this movie. I keep hearing about Bong Joon-ho. I'm going to go see Mother. Mother was the first movie I saw of his. And I've only, like, including Mickey 17, I've only seen 3 Bong Joon-ho movies. So okay. I'm hardly, like, I know Parasite, but I didn't see it. Like, I just, it wasn't.
You probably saw the 3 movies that are designed to make you understand Mickey 17, which is, I take it, Okja and Snowpiercer. And
No, I've seen Mother, Snowpiercer, and Mickey 17, and that's it.
Oh, okay.
Know about Okja, so, like, I understand, like, as I was watching Mickey 17, I was like, oh, okay. I know enough about that movie to know that, like, there's parts of its DNA are in this. And of course, Snowpiercer. Mother, not so much Mother stuff in here. Maybe with a little bit with I don't know what you'd call, whatever they call them themselves. Oh,
The creeps, the creepers.
Yeah. Mickey 17 is fucking, like, an insane movie that shouldn't work. It shifts tone, like, drastically from by the end of the movie. It's literally shifting tone minute to minute.
Yeah. But, and here's the thing that I feel like the way that you have, okay. So like Mother works in a weird way because it shifts tones the same way that Snowpiercer changes tones, which it goes from, but not as wildly as Mickey 17, right? It's more like Okja is basically the kind of the Rosetta Stone for Mickey 17, because it manages to juggle this weird ass tone, but it doesn't, like, you kind of like at the end of it, you're like, for me at least, at the end of Mickey 17, thankfully my wife didn't go with me, because I was like, she's like, is it worth it? And I'm like, I don't know if you're gonna like it, but I definitely want to see it again, because I want to see the trick of the tonal shifts, because man, like, you're right. Like, it goes like
the, like, people within, that I would recommend watching this movie to, like,
yeah,
I can list on one hand, you would be one of them, Spencer, Scott,
like,
that might be it. Like, if Ryan were still here, I'd probably be like, Ryan, you got to watch this. It's insane. It's the kind of movie that, like, it really doesn't get made anymore, especially, no, like, with American money. It has a very, like, it feels weird to say it has, like, this, like, French kind of sensibility to it.
It really does. Well, the cinematographer is the same guy who did Seven and then all of the, like, Amelie. And all of those, like, weird-ass French films, like Darius Conji.
Yeah.
So it does have, like, it feels like a European-flavored film, right? Like, even the effects shots feel like Alien Resurrection, he shot that movie. It, like, and on a scale, like, did you see it in IMAX, or did you see it just regular?
No, I just saw it in a regular theater.
But, like, okay, so, like, I have to ask you, like, the scale was, like, impressive to me, like, impressive with a capital I, because it doesn't feel, and I think that this is also Bong Joon-ho himself, like, just being a master of filmmaker, this film felt bigger than any of the sci-fi films I've seen recently.
Yeah.
And
the only one I think that kind of comes close was Alien Romulus, and it's because that movie, like, they scale back a lot, and so you're not, they don't try to give you, like, this grandness. And I think Mickey 17 kind of does that too. Like, it keeps everything relative. Like, there's not all these giant shots of things.
Yes. It keeps it very human scale. Like, very, like, the thing that I appreciate about the film more than anything is that it is a very, it's a very feed the rich or eat the rich kind of film. Yeah. Like, it's a very blue collar. Like, Mickey is, like, what I appreciate about Mickey Barnes is that, and Robert Pattinson himself, is that he is not afraid to make this guy the dumbest dolt that has ever been put on screen in space. Like, he is literally a fucking moron. And he continues to be a moron because he's, like, but he has, like, the most affably positive attitude towards the world that nobody should have, even though his, like, Mickey 18, spoilers, because we're ruining everything, where 18 is literally the audience, right? Like, we're literally, like, it's literally us if we were we were reprinted and we decide, like we were like,
what the like fuck? Super cynical, like, very just like, I've had enough of this shit. One of my favorite moments in the movie, but especially between the two of them, even though it's just Robert Pattinson, is when they're sending them out to cut the tails off of the creatures, and which is just so fucking weird. Like, where did that come from? But they're being, like, pushed out there, and Mickey 17's like, you know, this is just part of our punishment, and 18's like, what the fuck are you talking about? He's like, because we pushed the button and mom died, and he's like, she died because of a car accident. It had nothing to do with you pushing a button. But, like, all we'd been told up to that point is that he pushed this red button in the car when he was a kid and his mom died. Like, in our hearts, we know that, like, there's no button on a car, like, little, that you could just push that would cause something like that to happen. You'd have to do something way more drastic than that. And it was just a kid playing around in the car, and ultimately there was a car accident, and he thinks it was his fault. But, like, we're Mickey 18, like, going, like, that wasn't your fault, dude. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, yeah. Stop.
But when he talks about it, you're like, this is a film that I feel like also does point of view beautifully. Like, because Mickey is like the voiceover, and it's so droll, and it's so, but what I feel it does is it gets you into the mind to where when you first watch that, you go, what? And you're almost along the ride with this dolt. Cause, like, that's the only thing I can call him, is a dolt. Like, he's like, he is like, he is the space version of what's his name? From Mice and Men.
George Lenny. Yeah, Lenny.
He is the, basically, like, 17 and 18 are Lenny and George, right? Like, literally, that, like, I, like, it was hilarious watching because I was like, but he's a little bit more in tune, and he's like his softness is like what the world needs. Like in a weird way, he's like braver than anybody else in the movie. He's more attuned with humanity than everybody because he's an innocent, right? Like, there's just no way around it. Like, I guess it's not that he's at the most crass, he's an idiot and a moron, but he's more of an innocent than anything else, because it's like, even his, like, Timo, who's played by Steve Yeun, who, man, when are they going to fucking just give Steve Yeun a movie and just let him go do your fucking thing?
He's like, he's really good. Like, every time he shows up, he's a huge part of the movie in spirit. He doesn't have a lot of scenes in the movie, but every time he shows up, like, it's so, like, it's funny, but also, like, you hate him, but you kind of like him.
Yes, exactly. Like, he's a charming, like, okay. So a lot of people have always said Charming Rogue, and, like, it's not really real. Like, I think the last Charming Rogue we really had was, and he really isn't real, is Skeleton Crew and Jude Law's character.
Yeah.
But I feel like Yoon as Timo in this film really defines what I feel is a charming rogue. Like, he sells his friend up the river. Like, he literally signs all of the loan documents in his name. Yep. All of the, like, he takes all of his savings. Like, he's a fucking asshole. But when you watch him in this movie, even though he's an asshole, you're like, you kind of want the movie to be about him and not Mickey. But that's the point of his character, is that he's so fucking charming. But he's so, like most people that are that charming, they don't use it for good. They use it for bad. But he's so good. Like, he's so fucking good. Like, it almost, like, I love Lewis Pullman, but it almost makes me regret, like, makes me fucking angry that he couldn't be Century, that he, like, he wasn't cast as Bob Century. Oh, I'm sorry. That actually might have fucking ruined something for another movie. Hopefully you don't know what that means, but I know, Logan, you know what that
means. Yeah. I'm with you. I was actually going to say, it makes me a little sad that a movie he was supposed to be starring in, he had to drop out of because of scheduling conflicts. I know a lot of people will say whatever, but it really does seem like he was like, hey, we didn't go in time and I can't do this now. Yeah. So, he's just so great in this.
Yeah.
Like, And he's like, other than Mickey, he's one of the first characters we see. And like that whole thing sets the tone of most of the movie. I really enjoyed and liked this movie. It's so weird and wonderful. I do want to like say some negative stuff about it.
Okay. Yeah, no, absolutely.
I understand that Bong Joon-ho had final cut. Like he got to make the movie he wanted to make.
Mm-hmm.
I am genuinely for that. I think this movie indulges itself about 30 minutes too long. That I think there's definitely 30 minutes of this movie that could be gone. And it's just him indulging his own, like, I don't want to say worst tendencies, but it's like, oh, let's live in these, or let's extend these scenes out a little too long.
I can see that. I can see it. Like, even 10 minutes, I feel like could have helped. Like, it is a lot. It's 2 hours and 20 minutes. So there is a lengthiness of it. And there is definitely, especially with the early. Okay, so one thing that I can say to Logan's point is I clocked it. It's 20 minutes before we get the title sequence, the opening.
Yeah.
Mickey 17. Like, you could have cut that by about like 5 minutes and it would have been quicker and more efficient and probably a little bit more less. I don't even know how to call it, like gazy. Like a little bit less like hazy, because it really does feel like that opening moments, like that opening 20 minutes is,
and
like.
And there's some stuff at the very end that, like, every time you think it's about to, like, oh, this is the end, like the getting the baby back to them, it takes so long. Like, there's so much, like, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? That I feel like you can lose 3 or 4 minutes of that. It's not bad the way it is. It's just like it is incredibly long for what it is. It's still absolutely fantastically fun. I kept waiting on it to have some kind of like overall social commentary about something, and it does. Mark Ruffalo, I couldn't decide if he was doing his version of Trump or Elon Musk or some kind of weird combination of both of them, maybe.
Can I post something to you? I feel like between him and Toni Collette, they do they're like two halves of a whole, and they manage.
She feels like she's doing Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yeah, well, they all together, they're kind of like lampooning everybody, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, he definitely is doing, like, and my favorite thing is the font tonight with Marshall Green or whatever the fuck his name is, which is just Kenneth Marshall. Which is exactly the same font as like Jimmy Kimmel's font. Those fucking teeth, man. Those teeth play, but man, like he is part of the tonal shift that you don't expect, that you feel like shouldn't work, but it does, like between the two of them. Because like, even though like Pattinson is 17 as Mickey Barnes, is kind of arch and kind of like high, like it's kind of like a little over the top. It's edging over the top. Ruffalo and Toni Collette, like, there is no, like, it's like the thermometer that explodes. Like, if that's exactly what it is, it explodes and it keeps on fucking like spurting out gushing blood, because Jesus Christ, like, he is so over the top. It's not even funny, but it really works for the film. Like, there's no part of it where I go, oh, that just doesn't work. Like, it's like, oh, yeah, that totally works. Especially, like, towards the end when he's doing all, like, when they're both just the most, like the most disgusting animalistic pieces of shit in the world. Like, it's like, ah, yeah, well, it kind of is expected. Ruffalo's so weird. Like, I forget Ruffalo can go weird. And this is like a stark reminder. Oh, yeah, this is not due to
play. We're so used to seeing him as this, like, affable kind of, like, not really every man, but, like, you want to be buddies with him.
Yeah,
it's easy to forget that Mark Ruffalo can absolutely do, like, what the fuck was that? You know? Yeah.
I mean, Toni Collette, I never forget. Because she's such a weirdo.
always. Like, Toni Collette will, like, just lean into the weirdest shit. So, yeah, absolutely there.
The cruelty is, like, I was ready for it because of Okja. Like, Okja is a movie that, like, at a certain point, it does something. And it's so cruel and so dark of what it does. But it also speaks to humanity of what exactly humans do when they're faced with something that isn't them. That I was ready for what Mickey 17 does. But I feel like that is one of those things that I feel like people are going to be turned off by. Like, the cruelty at which it, even though it's quite literally exactly what humans do. Like, the whole tail thing and turning it into a sauce and what the evolution, like, one of my favorite lines, the evolution of a society is based off of sauce, which is such a stupid line, but it makes so much fucking sense, especially when you watch this movie. And yeah, like the counting, but it is cruel. Like, it is, like, it does not, but I mean, that's kind of Bong Joon-ho's thing, right? Like, there's a cruelty to everything, the way that humans treat, not just them, not just animals, but anything that an upper class person perceives as animals. Like, my favorite moment in Snowpiercer is the one that I rejected when I first saw it, which was the arm scene. Do you remember the arm scene?
Yeah.
And like a shoe, like, I fucking hate, like, that scene, seeing that in the theater, because I saw, like, you know, like, after Memories of Murder, I made sure that I saw everything in the theater because I wanted to. That scene, like, you could feel the entire theater turning on the movie, going, what the fuck is this movie? What are you doing? But it's also now my favorite scene in that movie because it's such a clear-eyed view of, it's just a clear-eyed view of humanity, right? Yeah. In I found wow, this is extremely cruel, and you could feel the theater, not, like, they were kind of with it, they were laughing at certain points, but when they start doing the things to the creepers, they did not like that in any way, shape, or form. You could feel them, like, tensing up, and I'm like, motherfuckers, we know that people do this. We just don't, like, animal testing. Come on.
Yeah.
Like, you don't think that this is what happens with cows? This is literally oxtail. Like, that's what we do with oxes. We cut them off and we cook them. But I found that really fascinating to watch with an audience. Like, the cruelty of the movie.
The shooting of the young youngling. Came out of the rock. That's part of the, like, the tonal shift stuff that we're talking about. It's like, it's goofy and weird and, like, okay, and then, like, all of a sudden it's just like, oh, hey, yeah, don't forget that humanity is vile and violent. And it's like, but then it shifts back to the goofiness of it all, you know. It's the creeper thing reminded me a lot of the if you've ever watched Futurama, you'll know the poplars. It had a very like that kind of vibe to it. But and that's not original to Futurama either. It's got a lot of interesting. Like I said, I kept waiting for it to make this overall statement on things, and instead it just does all these little microcosm things, and that's kind of interesting. It reminded me of sci-fi movies that we don't get anymore, even ones that I'm not particularly fond of, like The Fifth Element. You just don't see stuff like that anymore, especially, like I said, not in this country. So
no, but also you get my favorite part about this whole thing, this whole brouhaha about Mickey 17, because it was finished in 2023, and like it literally finished in November of 2023, and then Warner Brothers and Zaz did we're just gonna shelve it, and then the producer of the film, who is Brad Pitt, was like, you do that and I'm not working with you guys again. And he was in the middle of F1, like his $300 million.
Which the trailer was before this movie. I'm assuming it was probably in front of all the screenings.
He was in the middle of production and they cannot do anything about, because they were just Warner Brothers co-production with Apple Films, and they were at a stalemate for a long time. And then from what I understood, they did their first screening of F1, the mostly completed one, at the end of the year last year, and they think that they have something super special on their hands, like a Top Gun style movie, because of the work that they've done, they were like, oh, okay, I guess we should release this. And he forced their hand again and said, you're going to release this in a big way, not shove it down, not hide it behind something. So it got a big release. Right. But realize it's like, this is what I always find funny. Like, you hired Bong Joon-ho, a Korean filmmaker that made the most anti-capitalist movie of all time in Parasite. He made a movie about literally the downfall of society that was not a pleasant picture of it, in Snowpiercer. What the fuck did you expect him to do? That's my question, is are you fucking stupid? Do you think that he was going to play nice? No, he wasn't. And especially with the guy he got, literally Pattinson is becoming quickly one of my favorite actors, because he's such a weirdo kind of, I'm not going to approach this the way that you think I am.
Yeah.
It's
made it I was not a Pattinson guy, mostly because you look at that, the fucking teenager bullshit, and you're like, this guy's not an actor. But I felt the same way about Kristen Stewart, and their careers post those stupid vampire movies, them getting to do the weird things that they want to do. It's great, man. He's so fun in this, and watching him play these different versions of himself. I know we've seen people do it so many times, but I don't know, the way it's shot, the way he does it. I know that Bong Joon-ho often would not tell him which Mickey he was playing until right before they started filming.
A crazy fucking piece of direction, right?
Yeah.
But it also frees your brain up, right? I feel like that was something that, that kind of frees your brain up and gets you into that lizard space, because then it's I have to play this one. And it leaves you out of your thought process and more into your instincts. But it also, the weirdest part is, I feel like it works because both Mickeys are very distinct. You can tell when on screen, regardless of what he does. And you know that that's a studio note that he had to take, which is at the end, the whole burning of 17, of 18, because they weren't shirtless with the 17-18 thing, that was a studio note. I guarantee you, like, that was not something that they had, they initially had for the finale. To which it's like, man, like, people are not stupid. You know that, right? Like, people are not stupid. We're not dumb. But yeah, like it's so wild to like think that this kid who was a fucking navel gazing vampire, a diamond dust vampire, has like created some of the like he's doing some of the most inventive acting and weird acting. Like, he's, I hate, like, I'm not going to say because this, he is my favorite, and also like he's gotten 40 years of this, but he has this air of age to him, like this like ability to just be fucking wild and make it believable. Like, that's, yeah, where like the Nicolas Cage kind of comp comes. It's not the history of Cage, it's not the entirety of his like, you know, career. That's not what I'm just saying, like, the point of view and how he approaches it is very Cage-like. You know, except for he's just like a model looking motherfucker. Like,
I mean, does that start with Cosmopolis? Right? Because like, everything does up to that, like I mean, Water for Elephants is like, it's whatever. It's the Twilight movies. Remember Me is like such schlocky. I didn't even see it, but like I know everything about it, you know. And then he was in Harry Potter, the Goblet of Fire, and then the Twilight movies, but then he does Cosmopolis with Cronenberg, which, that's Cronenberg. It's just fucking weird. Like,
yeah.
And then The Rover, and then
so good. Good Time,
Lost City of Z, Lighthouse. You know, yeah, it's, yeah, been. I really need to go back and watch Tenet. I really do,
dude. Tenet is so wild. Like, okay, so like, I'm gonna give you my pitch for Tenet, because I love Tenet. Tenet is a movie that you understand when you're watching it, and then you get out of it and you go, what is that gobbledygook bullshit? Like, what? Time inversing things? What are you talking about? Stupid fucking Chris Nolan. And then you find yourself going, I need to see it again. Like, that literally is the movie. Like, I've gone back to Tenet more times now than I did my favorite Nolan movie, which is Inception. Like, it's one of those movies that I keep on going, why does it doesn't, what? Like, inside of it, it works. It's like a dream. Like, you know how, like, people say dream logic, and what they really mean is just weird? But yeah, this has a logic to it, and you watch it, and while you're watching it, at a certain point, you understand it, and you go with the flow with it. But then you get outside of it, and you go, what was that bullshit again? I don't understand this. What? But he, like... And also, he plays the best James Bond, not James Bond. Like, him and John David Washington are like these competing versions of spies that are like Bonds. And he plays like the Bond, like he plays like the spy that's kind of like the, like, I hate Roger Moore as James Bond, but he's doing Roger Moore James Bond better than Roger Moore is. It's that kind of, like, he calls everybody darling, but it's done in an English way. So you're like, okay. And he's, yeah, like it's a lot of fun. It's a huge movie. Like, you watch it, you go, wow, okay. So yeah, that's my elevator pitch for you. Like, watch it just because he is so fucking just charmingly cool. And it's a weird gobbledygook movie. Like, it doesn't make any sense. So yeah, like, I would definitely say, yeah. And especially if you've gotten through The Lighthouse, you can get through Tenet. Like, yeah, Lighthouse is by far like one of the weirdest fucking movies. I love that movie, but it is still fucking weird. You know, I just like the fact that he goes there, and he's also in Odyssey, like, which, yeah, is wild.
I want to shout out. We've talked about several other people that are in this movie. We have, mm-hmm, not talked about Naomi Aki.
Yeah,
who I love. She plays Nasha, and she's so, I don't know, she's just so fucking great in this. The first thing I ever saw her in, well, was probably a Doctor Who episode, because they're all in Doctor Who, but she was in this show called The End of the Fucking World. She was in that the same year she was in Rise of Skywalker, but you know, we won't talk about that. But I absolutely loved that show, and I love her, and it was so exciting to see her pop up here. I know she was in Blink Twice.
Oh, Blink Twice, yeah, which I have not seen.
And she was in the Whitney Houston movie.
Yeah, she plays Whitney, which I have not seen either, which I really need to see. I know her from, like, the first thing I saw her in was, it's the same thing I saw, it's in a great little movie, the one that Florence Pugh did, Lady Macbeth.
No, I want to see that. I haven't seen it.
It's really good. I will definitely say, like, you should check it out. But yeah, like, she's, because she has to, like, isn't she also in the, she's in the, Master of None, isn't she?
I never watched Master of None.
Oh, okay. Okay, then we won't talk about that. The interesting part is that she has to play against Pattinson when he's playing the dupes, and that's most of her scene.
Yeah,
and that's some great shit, isn't it?
Yeah, there's something about her that she's just so, like, I don't know. You just want to hang out with her or something. She's cool, but not, like, too cool. And I always bought that she loved Mickey. And the scene where, you know, there's two of them, it does get a little weird, but, like, you quickly realize that her and Mickey 18 are high, so high. You know, she makes the very salient point to Mickey 17, come on, if they were two of me, you'd be, like, losing your mind right now. So, yeah, it's a very small point of, like, yeah, dudes always want two women, but they never want to be like, but what if there were two dudes? I don't know. I think she's absolutely fantastic in, I don't want to say limited role, but, like, you know, it's not really her movie, but, like, she does a lot of the emotional lifting. So much so that we don't find out something, like, a key fucking component to their relationship and her character until pretty close to the end of the movie, in that she made them give her a suit and she sat in there in that gas chamber while he died.
Yeah. Which is the most touching, like, it's so weird, like, in a movie of, like, just, like, unhumanity, that moment, like, between her and, like, and him is so, like, so great. Like, it's just, like, it's so telling. And she plays it wonderfully. Like, the whole entire film feels like she's the anchor of humanity. Even when she's high, she feels like the anchor of humanity. Yeah. Like you were saying, like, you know, two Mickey 17s or, like, two Mickeys, like, of course, like, you wouldn't do the same thing if it was, like, two of me.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, it's such a weird and wonderful movie. The only negative thing I could say is, like, hey, it might be about 20 or 30 minutes too long. But it's none of it's not enjoyable. Like, it is absolutely just bonkers and fun and funny and thought provoking, and you know, yeah, such great performances. I don't see it doing what Parasite did. Like, I doubt we're gonna get to next March and it'll be like, oh, will Mickey 17 win Bong Joon-ho an Oscar? I don't think so, but it's definitely a fun little like aside. I'm excited to see what he does next. It's wild to me that he's walking two worlds, more or less. Like,
yeah,
he's still making, you know, like I imagine next he'll probably make a foreign language film, you know, like and that's kind of been his back and forth lately. Like,
yes.
So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see.
So like just as a little thing to it, supposedly he's working on a Korean action horror film that's set in the bowels of the Korean sewer system, which from what I understand is epic and legendary. It's like literally thousands and thousands of miles of sewage piping and like sewage systems. So much so that they have like there's like certain areas haven't been explored for years, and that's where his setup is. So, and it's a very Korean film. So hopefully my little short review for this movie was the only thing that I feel like this movie didn't have, was a part for Kang Ho Song, who's normally the guy who he uses in his Korean films. He has shown up in his American movies. And he just didn't get shown up here. I feel like the Steve Yeun part was the part that he would have played. Yeah. But I only can hope that he has a role in this.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, that's sorry for the short episode. It was blame Skype. we will be back next week talking about I'm not sure what, but we'll see. Until then, you can check out everything else we're doing over at xwingfiles.com, or you can read our written work over at Adam's website.
Yes, themovieowl.com, where I have I actually have a metric fuck ton of stuff going on right now, like 4Ks, home video. I actually reviewed the Paul W.S. Anderson film, In the Lost Lands.
Is it good? Is it
no? Not, it's fucking terrible.
That
dude.
Trailer looks so cheesy and like bad special effects, and
but promising, right? Like it's like, oh, maybe it'll be a bad
like Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow. Like, exactly. Yeah, it might be fun.
but no, it's through and through just terrible. And it's like, I'm a big W.S. Anderson stan. Like, I love the Resident Evil films. I even loved Monster Hunter, the movie that he did recently. This is like a CGI gobbledygook mess. It doesn't work in any way, shape, or form. The acting is terrible. Like, honestly, I don't know why they made this movie. Like, it's really sad because it should have been designed for me. But it's not. It's pretty bad. And I'm not gonna, like, I mean, you could read my review of it. But I also got a bunch of home video stuff that's up on the site right now. Some great like late 90s, early aughts films that like are like I just did a review of The General's Daughter, which I had reviewed I hadn't seen in years. And I forgot, you know, that John Travolta was a thing. Like, I didn't realize that. I forgot about that because that movie I didn't like. But the movie that I watched after it that I'm not going to review because there's no really good home release for it, and I have an old Blu-ray of it, is, have you ever seen Basic with John McTiernan?
Basic is fucking good, man. It's good. Like, I do not understand why that movie doesn't get talked about more, because it's good.
Yes. It's wild, like we're talking like wild tonal shifts. Like, this would like pair perfectly with Mickey 17 because it's like, but it's also like the 97-minute movie that should have made a bunch of money but didn't. But it's also got this like crazy John Travolta performance where, like, he was so proud of himself, he does an entire scene shirtless because he literally has a six pack.
Yeah.
I'm not okay. Like, you know, I'm married and stuff. I literally had to rewind this fucking movie to watch this like happen.
Like, does John Travolta ever look this good?
Yeah. I'm like, holy shit. But that movie is fucking wild and I loved it. So like thank you, General Daughter, which has a 4K release where if you like the movie, the transfer for this fucking movie, like, wow, that's fucking great. I don't know if you've ever seen the heavy metal movie from the 80s called Trick or Treat. That fucking movie is great, and I have a review of that because that has a 4K release. Didn't even have a Blu-ray release. Went from straight from DVD to Blu-ray. A fucking great little movie. Go ahead and read that review. So, like, and I've got a bunch of other stuff that's coming up this week. There's a specific Stallone movie that I'm actually reviewing in 4K. It's like you're just gonna have to read. It's very, very, very Stallone, as one would expect. But yeah, there's all a bunch of shit going on the movie aisle. So, you know, go ahead and check it out, and we'll be back next week talking about something.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. We'll see you guys then.
Number 2 comics, number 3 Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit, number 4 Mario, number 5 Weird Al, number 6 Batman, number 7 Cal, number 8 Simpsons, number 9 TV, number 10 every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, see it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything.